follows. So as to read, the person who is tried as an adult in a court of criminal jurisdiction, that simply adds the word as an adult, A, is not criminally responsible for any conduct, and then I would add the word which occurred, when the person was less than 14 years old, period, instead of semicolon. And my amendment would also delete subsection B, allow section 2 to remain.
Well, actually, sub A would be out too, just the letter itself would be gone in the end.
Correct. Dramatically.
Any questions or discussion of the motion? Any second of the motion? I'll second it for purposes of getting.
Seems to me that you're talking about a very narrow class of cases here. If he's under 14, and by chance isn't happening at home until he's 19. Those cases are so rare that I'd be willing to take a chance on it. If he's above 14, and you have a little type situation, your speedy trial is going to take care of it. If he's 14, let's say, and he kills and rapes the girl, the DA isn't going to be allowed to sit on it for 2 years to wait to remand. So that'll take care of that problem. It seems to me that the little rule plus speedy trial solves the problems of those who are 14 and above. And for those who are under 14, assuming they aren't handled as a juvenile, reasonably soon apprehended, that by the time they get to be 19, why bother? The number of cases would be so rare to be less than the bars of soap and ivory and sink.
Any other questions?
Does it, as amended, does this statute provide that a person over 14 years old is criminally responsible? Or is it a common law interpretation saying that since it doesn't provide the people who are over 14 years old, that when common law controls, mean it's a presumption situation? See, it's phrased in a negative, absolving of responsibility. What about a person who is 14, or whatever age you settle upon? Should we add a phrase saying who he is?
Well, a person above 14 is not criminally responsible, assuming he is handled as a juvenile, unless he is of a manageable age, or unless he is a little, and you can hold on to him long enough to remand him several months later. I don't think that you would thereby be saying automatically those 14 years over are criminal.
No, can a fellow come in to court and say little? And can he say under this statute, the statute doesn't control my situation, and I was too young to form intent.
But he was 15 years, 10 months, and he doesn't get a presumption anywhere.
Well,
there. Under the common law, it wouldn't be entitled to anything.
In absence of other statutes, I think that you'd be right that we will have. We have now our juvenile code. Your point is perhaps we should make this clear.
Yeah, I mean, should you also say to Congress, any person
14.
Who was over 14 at the time of commission of the act,
14 or
is responsible, criminally responsible?
I don't think you need to say it. Because assuming my amendment is what we finally end up with, and you have a 14 and a half year old who killed his girlfriend, assuming he's apprehended, reasonably assume, you probably can't, under speeding trial rules, remand him. Therefore, you'll handle him as a juvenile. If he is, if he's either gone long enough so that you can, by the time you catch him, you can remand him or treat him as an adult. Reason why he wants to make a claim, I suppose he'd make a claim. Didn't know he would do it. Too young.
In other words, a person who is tried as an adult take care of your problem?
I'm not sure it's a problem. I'm just a little bit sensitive about phrasing the negative.
This consideration is always should be looked at in any kind of a draft. If you state the positive, you ought to look at what the negative is and vice versa. But sooner or later, you get to the point of the draftsman's favorite gremlin or favorite hate, I guess, is saying really, again, in another sentence, and we really mean what we just said. And I think we reached that point with this. I really think this is safe. As it's suggested.
Any other discussion? John?
No. I agree with both.
All in favor of the amendment?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Aye. Opposed?
Please excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Frank, yes, Dr. Stiglitz. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm saying, I don't know if it's the only thing
satisfied then with section 2 of amendment leading. I guess we will have a subsection 2 defense under this section. There's an affirmative defense.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question about that. Subsection 2, when we say affirmative defense, this presumably will take a situation in which indicted kid comes in and says, well, I was only 13 years and 9 months, up to him to prove. Query, is it to be by preponderance or what?
Well, when you say it's an affirmative defense, I understand what happened with our criminal responsibility, and an affirmative defense is just something that a defendant only would have to testify, well, I may have been under the age of 14, and then it would be the state to prove that he was 14 beyond a reasonable doubt, at least the way...
Correct. The way it's used here.
Which is apparently is contrary to California's rule, because when they're talking about insanity, where they say that it shall be that the defendant, or the mental illness or defect, including the
incorporate by reference of a non-existent provision here with respect to the word of art permanent defense, and I'm incorporating as if it had been adopted by this commission, seeing that the definition of that term appears in Model Penal Code. I've got the section cited here somewhere, 2.01, if I recall, or 112.
Well,
with the fact that you've stated,
right. All it's saying is that the prosecution doesn't have to negate all the possible defense. In fact, that's all it's saying. You don't have to fiddle around when you're preparing your case.
This isn't so much of a problem now as it would have been if we'd adopted the presumption, rebuttable presumption situation. Proving age is not a matter of fact. It's either you can or you can't, but if you were proving rebuttable presumption as to whether those consequences of an act, then it becomes much more substantial question as to where the burden is. Now, I don't know whether I would even recommend that this sub 2 be left in here in light of the provision. It might be that the state ought to negate that in its case at the outset. I don't know whether you want to do that or not. I'm sure you don't want to do it, Frank. The subcommittee may want to leave that affirmative defense off there entirely. So it would be a fact that the state would have to negate
gross for you every time.
In every criminal case tried, it would have to be brought in.
You know, we have a similar situation under the rape statutes. It refers to a person over 16. In the case called State v. Cole, there's a motion for judgment of acquittal at the end of the state's case based on the fact the state did not prove that he was over 16. Our court held that it's to the defendant to prove.
Because they say this would be a defense, but under what apparently this is going to be the suggested definition of affirmative defense, it doesn't mean that.
I think at some point before the entire draft is passed, it'd be a good idea to list out just what affirmative defenses have been set up and see if they're properly handled in that manner.
So far, we don't have it up until this point.
Well, we had it. Not in this subcommittee. Yeah.
In the same sense that we're dealing with it here.
Well, in a sense, that plain right.
With the effect that some evidence by the defendant then puts the burden beyond reasonable doubt on the state.
No, we specify that it is not that the burden is on the defendant to raise the question, but it does not shift the burden of proof. That's the way we phrase it.
All
right, I'm ready for a motion to adopt Section 2 that amended it.
Absolutely.
I'll second. Any discussion? Any further discussion? All in favor? Senator Curry will let you vote here. Chairman.
Am I entitled to a vote?
I think so.
If I am, I would.
Chairman's all of it. Frank?
He's a roving member of all
seven. Let's go back to Section 1 and see if we can make a recommendation to the full committee on that. Everybody satisfied with it?
My frank opinion, Mr. Chairman, both this on this and on the draft of the insanity rule that I've gone over in my mind kind of goofy and let me read quite thoroughly through Goldstein. Frankly, I go back and forth on which I think is the right one, and I believe that we ought to move it along and get it out of the subcommittee and have the hearing before the full commission when we talk about this psychiatric testimony and so on. Frankly, at that point, I think I'd be better able to make a decision. What I'm saying, really, I think is I'm about ready to vote it out about the way it is. I'm not at all sure I'm going to be that way when I end up, because every time I read a new chapter in this one book, I think, I'm sure dumb yesterday.
There's no end to reading.
And each one is says he's the Holy Writ.
Frank, you have any comments?
Well, that's all I've got is my, to base any decision I've got on, just my own personal feeling based on any prejudices that I might have. And, I don't, maybe after I hear some psychiatrists who can convince me, I might be willing to vote for it. But right now, I'm not. But I don't think I'm ready to make a decision on it. But I agree that I think if we're going to have these people come in before the full commission, let's get it done.
I might just add this one thing.
The pressure responsibility of the insanity defense.
What's pressure responsibility?
I might just add this one thing. I had talked to Professor Platt a week or so ago and gave him a list of names of defense attorneys. I talked to this morning, happened to run into Oscar Talbot in coffee this morning. Oscar prosecuted for 7 or 8 years. Since then, in the last 5 or 6 years, almost totally engaged in the same criminal practice. On the partial responsibility thing, Oscar was very much of the impression that in all of the courts that he's been in, that in effect, you have a partial responsibility rule without necessarily being stated to get in this material. May have some effect, probably not other than your first degree murder case. In the straight insanity area, he said that there was only one time where he deliberately did not assert an insanity defense, and this was a very peculiar fact situation where the fellow had committed some severe assault on some children and was treated as a mentally ill person initially, committed to the state hospital for about 2 or 2.5 years, was then released, and shortly after was charged with a violent sexual assault. Oscar wanted to put in insanity defense, and he says, nothing doing. He says, I'd rather go to the pen for 20 years and back to that hospital for another 2. And he positively would not let him assert it. But Oscar said that's the only case that he has ever seen where he did not assert it. And that was the reason. He was of the impression also as long as you get a decent amount of liberality in your evidence rulings, that it doesn't really make much difference what you're I talked to the court that as well. We've been talking about getting the views of some people. Mm-hmm.
Two comments.
Yeah.
One, I would endorse the use of this phrase, specific intended purpose, as opposed to state of mind. Because at least it has a more discerning. I'm not sure it's the best phrase, but it's a better phrase than one found in the other statutes. Secondly, we discussed the problem. Passage of this would not change practice in the courts a great deal, which Judge Murray just indicated. However, the thing which might change practice a little bit is the inclusion of a notice statute or a section. And we discussed slightly before that no vote was taken in the in other words, the idea kind of faded away. And I would suggest to you the inclusion of some sort of notice provision so that the expert testimony can be as sharp as enlightening as possible.
Well, that would be my own preference also, and I might add that there is a, here again I'm saying there is a case, I wish I could tell you the name, I have a list of them here, but there is a case which I have found almost on point, where the court said, although it's used as dictum really, it wasn't a direct holding, the court said that where there was going to be evidence of a psychiatric nature to show partial responsibility, although it didn't use that term, it used a reduction of the offense, that there must be a notice. So I think the dictum basis, the Oregon court would say that there ought to be notice here because it's so similar to the insanity defense kind of evidence.
As a matter of fact, the statute presently says, wherever the defendant, the present statute, wherever the defendant pleaded not guilty and purposes to show that he was insane or mentally defective at the time, he shall give notice.
Just exactly what the Supreme Court looked at.
And so those words, and presumably being mentally defective wouldn't be a complete defense, but presumably it would be there for some purpose. So in that respect, it wouldn't be changing the statute. I wonder, however, if it wouldn't be sufficient merely to say that you must give notice where you intend to assert partial responsibility and intend to support it by expert testimony. I don't know if you might use the term expert testimony as a matter of fact. In other words, if this is really what you're after,
I think that's very appropriate.
Well, here I ask the question now. I don't know the answer. But let's assume that there is no notice statute. And the entire testimony of the defendant on partial responsibility is the lay witness, the opinion witness. Isn't the state still in the same fix of being surprised and having to then bring its own psychiatric experts in? Just the same as if a psychiatrist had come in for the defendant. The issue is raised, and the only way they're really going to effectively rebut it is to bring in psychiatric testimony. And at that point, start preparing this very highly technical assault on the defendant's case, even though it's only lay witness.
So, when you got lay witnesses, you don't really have to, you're not really overly concerned about it, because the facts of the case usually overwhelm the mother testifying, oh my God. Four kids and this, that, and the other thing, so you're really not overly concerned about that.
Yes, but wouldn't you, as a prosecutor, feel much better about a psychiatrist on your side of the case rather than trying to rebut it with a lay witness? The sheriff who arrested him or the police who observed him? I mean, as a practical matter, aren't you going to bring in a psychiatrist at that point?
Or neighbors.
More likely neighbors, but the problem is if you generalize it to the entire defense, no matter how it's presented, then what happens when the fellow does get on the stand and says, well, I was drunk, I didn't know what I was doing, I was just going to wander in there. And the prosecutor gets up and says, move to strike. There's no notice of intent to rely on partial responsibility. You know,
well, Matt, you can do that under the existing Intoxication Act, okay?
Pardon me?
Maybe off base, but I don't see the. I think we should keep that separate. The intoxication.
Well, intoxication.
This is defense.
Well, intoxication affects specific intent in the burglary case. The intoxication statute affects only.
But you certainly don't need psychiatrists to prove that the fellow was sober.
No.
You do need a psychiatrist to prove that he wasn't mentally ill.
That's why I'm saying, perhaps against my own interest. That's what I'm saying, but perhaps against my own interest, that I thought Judge Burns' idea of restricting intent to the notice of intent to the expert witness situation would probably be more workable.
I don't know that there are very many cases in which a prosecutor would feel compelled to call a psychiatrist merely because the defendant brings in his mother or his
neighbor. I think he would.
So bring his lawyers
come in here and testify as how peculiarly this fellow has been acting and so on, in terms that are permitted to members of that jury.
Yeah,
the first thing the prosecution
there
would do would be calling his captains.
More likely, he would call other neighbors.
Well, he could do that.
The problem is going to be here, though. I mean, this is what bothers me about partial responsibility, that when does partial responsibility come to the point of being insanity? And clearly this, under partial responsibility, if they didn't give you notice, they couldn't go so far in their testimony as to say that he was insane. Otherwise, it would be inadmissible because they didn't give you notice.
Yeah, well, of course, jury form of the jury when struck out.
I have a question here, which is probably very naive, but have there been any constitutional attacks on the requirement of notice from the defendant on the type of evidence he's something?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, the states have alibi statutes with notice. And,
you can't conceive of any ground on which there should be a constitutional objection to it. I haven't revealed your case.
But I still feel that taking the judgment for the expert witness, for the Supreme Court, would be on that.
I hate to argue against interest because I think Senator Terry is trying to be nicer to us than I think. Frank, too. I mean,
well, I think as a practical matter, let me
the number of times in which a defendant makes a serious attempt to diminish responsibility to lay testimony, and it has any real impact, so that the DA gets real shook up and starts ruining the psychiatrist. It's almost impossible to conjure up that type of case.
Actually, though, Jim, when you look at the partial responsibility section here in and of itself, from a practical point of view, if we didn't adopt it at all, don't you, in effect, really have substantially the same result the way cases are going on?
Yes, in my opinion, we have partial responsibility right now.
I think so.
In the sense that you can bring on lay witnesses or psychiatrists, and I think that testimony is his state of mind, whether or not he can form the intent, so on, that would be admissible.
As long as they don't go so far as to say that
you don't get it.
I had this problem in a manslaughter case when they brought down he testified, if you just cut out one sentence from his testimony, that he was not, that he did know the difference between right and wrong, and this, his testimony was the very same as far as, it was just, he just left out the not from his opinion. His sentence is all that he did. His testimony was the very same. But the thing it was, they didn't want him committed to the state hospital.
I think there's a distinction here that I'm groping with. Let me try it out. The issue in insanity, I have a feeling that I'm safe in saying this, that lay witnesses without any psychiatrist involved could try that issue with a fair degree of success, let's say, on both sides. Because after all, what it comes down to is convincing the jury that the fellow sitting across the room from them was crazy when he committed the act. Now, what's the issue on partial responsibility? It's not the same at all. They can't look at him and say he was crazy because they're not to do that. That's not an issue in the case. What they're faced with is determining that he's only partly crazy, that he's only partially responsible. In short, I don't think that the state could afford to allow, rely on lay witnesses to come back and prove that someone could not form premeditation. But the only people that are going to be of real use to a jury in this very technical area is going to be the psychiatrist and the psychologist. Now, am I completely off base there? It seems to me to be a distinction in what you're trying to prove and who's the proof. I can't imagine a defendant trying to prove partial insanity with a lay witness. I suppose what I'm saying.
Well, it's generally not insanity. I mean, insanity comes in.
I know it's not insanity at all.
Talking about premeditation, perhaps. But it doesn't come in that I can think of on the specific intent crimes to which the partial responsibility doctrine is applicable: intent to steal or intent to deprive permanently. And those are generally what we're talking about is drunkenness.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact in front of the jury is just how drunk he was. If he had 8 drinks,
yeah, but
he calling in a pathologist.
The point is, I suppose, a lay witness can pretty well testify as to whether somebody was drunk. Maybe he was knee walking drunk, or his eyes were crossed drunk. But a lay witness can't come in and say he was only partially responsible. He can say, I think he was crazy because he was flying around the room. But he can't say, I think that he should be convicted of a lesser offense because he was flying around the room.
Well, he can say he was just awfully drunk. And then the lawyer argues he was so drunk. And he said, well, I was so drunk, I wasn't trying to steal it. I just picked it up, I guess. I hardly remember it. And then it is argued to the jury, you know, the judge is going to tell you that he must have specific intent to steal. And he was obviously too drunk to be thinking about anything. He didn't have specific intent to do it. But he sure did break in.
I can see partial responsibility in reducing the person may not have been so insane that he is throwing the breeze or whatever your test is, that he's not guilty by reason of intent. But yet, because of his mental condition, he may not have been able to premeditate or deliberate. But when, in effect, your partial responsibility to be a complete defense to the crime, such as in burglary, larceny, OMFP, any of these other ones that require specific intent, that then it seems to me that either they should be insane or they should be convicted. They're either not guilty or reason of sanity or they should be convicted, and that this partial responsibility should be left in the area of
Tony, do you remember that statute we had last session? Bob Smith introduced one of his constituents who was drinking. Went to what he thought his girlfriend's house.
Yeah.
11 South 3rd at Burns, and it turned out he was in Ontario and broke into the wrong house. Recently recognized partial responsibility legislation. I think we passed that.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
What's the statute?
The guy that was visiting a house that was welcoming him. He had to break in and turn out to be the wrong town.
Well, the right girl in the wrong town?
Because it was a conviction under a statute, trespass or breaking or entry or something, and no intent was required under that statute. So we amended that particular statute to require an intent.
Yeah,
I had one of those.
And did away with unlawful entry.
That's right.
Doing that.
Yeah.
So that it's either burglary or it's all right.
That's right.
I had a convicted judge who gave the same offense, and Judge Jones wasn't persuaded he was guilty and gave him probation.
We recognize that.
But Frank, what you're saying is we shouldn't have partial responsibility in these areas. But in fact, we have. If you're say that, what you ought to do is affirmatively legislate to take it away.
Right.
Yeah, if this statute was not passed, the law would remain unaffected. And that's why I say the argument should be over.
Well, I'm not so sure that's right, okay? I'm not so sure that there is established as a legal principle, and I can practically have it, but our Supreme Court has not said whether we like it or not. I think this is the place that we ought to say we do or we don't like it.
I think there are a lot of dispute.
I agree with you. In practice and in fact, though not directly, the Supreme Court knows it's going on, and they've looked at it in a few cases. They clearly never taken the opportunity to rule one way or another, because they had a chance in a very recent case. I can't remember the name of the jury again, but it's fairly recent. Had two errors alleged or brought up before them. One was the constitutional rights under Neely, and the other one was the instruction that the defendant asked for on partial responsibility, which had been declined. The Supreme Court said clearly he should have been warned of his constitutional rights, and we reverse on that point. And since the other issue may not now come up at trial, we need not say what the result would be. So that's why I say that there is a real doubt as to whether it is legally, it is case law in the state. I think we ought to clear it up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let me make one more argument in favor, if you're going to have partial responsibility, in favor of a notice under any circumstance. Number one, I don't see that the burden on the defendant is any greater if only lay witnesses are going to be used, because it's a piece of paper. He doesn't have to say what witnesses he's going to bring in. He simply has to give notice that he's going to defend on grounds of mental illness or whatever the statute will read. All right. Now, that's not a great burden. But look at the burden on this subcommittee
just a practical problem of how would you define expert witness, for instance? I'd like to avoid that problem if we can, if there's no harm really created by leaving the notice in general.
Is it not defined elsewhere?
I don't know. I'm curious to find one. What it is.
It doesn't seem to be as difficult to define those.
Yeah. One that the courts will allow with the president.
Well, the thing that I see, if you're requiring
to
give notice in every case, the thing that I see is that pretty soon, the minute you get up and you say, well, I was drunk and didn't know what I was doing, bang, you get the motion, they get the testimony stricken. Because DAs are like defense lawyers. They push rules to the limit. And that's what they're supposed to do.
The court is going to have to rule away for testimony other than that of the defendant. Supposing that I can see where the defendant himself accused is on the stand and says, well, I don't know what I was doing. I've been drinking so much. You know, that's the type of case you're talking about. Well, why don't we tie this in to where the partial responsibility or the inability to know and so on, the defense is going to depend on the testimony of someone other than the defendant.
That might also have the virtue of avoiding some sort of Fifth Amendment challenge.
Well, I think it would.
But really, this thing here we're talking about is separate from mental disease or defect. Now, just simply lack of memory isn't going to be a mental defect.
He goes on and says how much he had been drinking, and he discovered later that he had also done this and that and the other thing, which he didn't recall or think possibilities. But if he's going to call some other witness, who in effect will be testifying to facts on the basis of which the jury is to conclude the defendant didn't know what he was doing, then perhaps also the defense attorney, then would know. He might not know exactly what his defendant is going to say on that stand. He should. But what if he comes forth with something unexpected to his own counsel? But if the defense counsel is going to depend on the testimony of another witness to this toward this effect, then the prosecution probably has a right to know.
Well, I'm satisfied with the way it is. I can't really see the problem of needing notice, and I think a number of attorneys who occasionally get a criminal law case, and a number of times that wouldn't be given, I think you'd have some real procedural and constitutional problems with it, too.
Well, Dale, what happens when all of a sudden the psychiatrist trots in? Yeah. There's no way for the state to counter, because that must be done ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. How many times, though, as a practical matter, again, we keep going back to this, and this shouldn't be our test, I know, but it seems to be. How many times are you going to have to be faced with psychiatric testimony on behalf of the defendant and on a case like this, a partial response?
Well, I don't know what the practical...
Secondly, how many crimes... All right, where there's specific intent involved, and it's one that there aren't. What's the proportion, anyway? What would you say?
It's small, I think, number of specific intent crimes.
Look at the crimes prosecuted. Burglary and larceny are probably the most common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that gets the most public.
And it can be brought in ORP.
Burglary, most forms of arson,
check
robbery.
Assault with intent.
Yeah, any assault
with intent to kill.
Check cases. All except for the very minor crimes.
The crimes prosecuted.
You
wouldn't
have psychiatrists wandering in the district court very often.
Mm-hmm. And then homicide.
Yeah.
Is the major.
I'm inclined to think that we could draft something along the line of Tony suggested. You don't want to notice provision that. So harsh that keeps the defendant out completely. But on the other hand,
agree on what that means. Yeah, I can see it there, just in the area. Why don't we just, for the sake of getting this to the full committee, then some simple language we worked on?
Well, let me propose this. Suppose we ask the Professor Platt to draft a notice provision in the alternative, one branch of which would require notice wherever expert witnesses are called, if we can get a definition of that. The other branch require notice wherever witnesses other than the defendant himself are proposed to be called in support of the contention. And pass that along to the full committee, we understand.
Now, let me ask a question for my own clarification. Senator Atturi, did you mean to include in that the intoxication situation also? So in effect, we would require notice where a witness other than the defendant was going to testify that the defendant was too drunk to form a specific intent.
I didn't have intoxication in my home.
So we'll leave it effective only with respect to the partial responsibility.
Yeah.
And either or.
I'll see if I can come up with something. It's necessary to define expert witness, really. I think that's a term.
Can your court take judicial notice?
It's a term of art.
Well, you have to make that determination each time. Because if he's not an expert, the other guy's going to object, and then the court has to rule.
That's right.
Sure.
No problem.
I don't think you don't have anything. There's something on it in one of the ORS 41, 42, 43, 44, along in there, personal learned in something or other.
Yes, I remember
it. I don't think you have anything.
Well, subject to the drafting of this notice, do you want to go ahead and
of course, the notice requirement that we're talking about now will apply equally. It'll be drafted in such a way as to apply not only to partial insanity, but also to insanity itself. There's no point in having a provision, as I see it, well, no, wait a minute, maybe there will be. One for insanity. I take it that in the insanity situation, there's no doubt in the minds of the subcommittee that notice is required no matter what kind of witness is going to be.
Correct.
Yes,
everybody's happy with it.
Present.
Well, in that case, if we adopt this would have to be a separate section.
You might take
there have to be two notice provisions then.
Two sections. Same
right. Part of the same section.
You might take a look at 44.060. A witness can testify of those facts only which he knows his own knowledge, except in those expressed cases in which his opinions or inferences or the declaration of others are admissible.
There are some others too. Judge along in there. I forgot exactly what the fact is.
I'll take a look at them.
Is that old nine?
Why? What do you mean by you was on the
decided to have met several?
The proposal is to pass along the full commission section one on partial responsibility plus a notice provision drafted in the alternative. And I would move that we do that.
Any further discussion?
You're weeping.
All in favor?
Aye.
Now, Don, you have on the final part of the agenda back to this draft number one on responsibility.
Well, we may have been a little optimistic when we put that on there, but we thought that perhaps the subcommittee might want to discuss further preliminary draft number one.
Very interesting to note that the California notice provision is specifically restricted to expert testimony. And it uses the word expert testimony without any definition.
I wanted to note, just in passing, simply as a matter of organization, if you will, include the intoxication section within this grouping of statutes. That's what personally, I don't see much reason to change. I don't see any reason to change one like that.
Well, that's perfectly all right with me, except I do point out the Model Penal Code has an intoxication section under Article 3, isn't it, or 2? It's elsewhere. It's not in the responsibility section.
It just seemed good.
It has the same kind of rule that Oregon now has by statute. And it is under general principles of liability. Now, why it's there, I frankly don't know. It could be just as easily in the responsibility section. You want, would the subcommittee want to direct me to go into the intoxication thing and present a draft on that and make it a part of responsibility?
Michigan Code has an under responsibility section, doesn't it?
I hadn't noticed that. Certainly is germane to our problem.
Yeah, it seems to fall in there.
You know, when you present this to the Code Commission, these questions are going to arise. It seems to me it's only logical to have them together.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah, I think.
Well, I take it then that you will want me to present to the subcommittee this section for its scrutiny before it passes, takes any action on it. So I will include that in responsibility.
I'm not sure it's a little off the subject, but I'd like to call two articles to the attention of the subcommittee and think maybe it'd be wise to send it all to committee members because a lot of committee members don't get to the American Bar Association Journal, but in the September issue, Page 877, was a pretty good article, I think, on chronic alcohol addiction and criminal responsibility. And in the Saturday Review of September 7th, an article by Dr. Carl Menninger on the crime of punishment. And I bought the issue because I noticed it was pretty good. And we're trying to decide whether to toughen up or lighten up what provisions they come up with.
Playboy and
not the Playboy. Right. I haven't looked at Playboy to see whether they've got anything on Playboy or not. I usually find a good excuse to buy it.
Dale, I've got nothing to do with it, but I've reproduced that literature article and distributed to my criminal law class and my criminal procedure.
Well, don't you think this would be good to send out to all members of the committee?
I think we're doing it, but it's just for future thinking, yeah.
Right. And did you read the other one?
The ABA article, I have not read it. I've seen it. Just put on top of future thinking only.
Okay.
Or in Ben County.
I haven't got around to reading some books, but I think you are very often.
Are we talking about responsibility now back onto the field?
Back on the matter.
Substantial this section.
Let's also, California has mental illness, which is a new phrase. Normally, I don't think it's in any of the other rules. Which is intended to expand the psychiatric testimony, the fields in which things can go.
I think the only strong feeling I have is that New York, Michigan, Illinois, and respectively California, none of them stay completely with pure monotony. I appreciate what you said about monotony, but there's nothing that's just impossible in this present to do something, but it seems to me that the vision has a duty to adopt something that will look to the future and will allow the use of scientific discoveries as they are made. More realistic and how evidence may come in. I don't want to open the doors to you.
Well, it has our authority to bring the court on this.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be better to say it?
Actually, when we enact it, even if we enact the model penal code, we may almost be more restrictive than our Oregon Supreme Court said.
Just don't go so far as that weakness. Weakness, illness, disease, or defect.
I think the whole thing is a little bit like medieval theologian. The fact of business is that whatever rule you got, it depends on how sellable the defendant looks and how sellable you think they have to be, plus the eloquence of attorneys on the final market. I defy you to pick the first 10, 12 laymen coming down the street and read the two definitions between substantial capacity to conform and to appreciate the conduct and so on, and to get them to meaningfully tell you that there's a real difference in that terminology. Frankly, I just don't think that. I think the jury does what a jury is supposed to do. It renders a common, everyday, community-based standard of decision on these cases. So long as you have plenty of leeway in your admissibility.
Don't you think that your comments, Judge, on partial responsibility with respect to letting the full commission consider apply certainly as strongly as this?
Even
more so.
I think even more so. Frankly, I don't know. I've been reading this Goldstein book and this book by Sheldon Gluck that I mentioned. He discussed the flat out on the phone the other day. And every time I read another chapter where he's tearing apart the Durham rule, why I'm against Durham. And the next day I'm reading one about the ALI and I'm in favor of that one, and so on. You can keep reading forever on this stuff. But frankly, I think we ought to. Personally, I'd be willing to either vote this one to the commission or vote some other one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to have to be well discussed there, too.
The suggestion I make is that the action of the subcommittee be present a substantially different version of the McNaught rule. I mean, substantially different, that's kind of a weasel word, but at least a different rule. Whether or not the subcommittee members are completely sold on it or not. For the simple reason, if we come back with McNaughton only, I'm afraid that the discussion will end too soon. Or am I making any sense at all? If we say we're satisfied with the rule that now exists, that may cut things off prematurely.
It seems to me this commission and this subcommittee should not ignore what has taken place in the state in the past. That is, the efforts of the interim committee on criminal law that endorsed the ALI proposal, the action of the legislature in 1961, which endorsed the ALI proposal. I think that we should certainly give serious consideration to at least having this considered by the full commission any decisions made one way or another.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move that we certify, pass along to the full commission, the text as presently worded, without any suggestion of this necessarily as an endorsement by any specific member of the subcommittee, recognizing that we want the thing thoroughly discussed by you and by the full commission. And until the full commission, because that's why we're
trying to. I think that's our purpose, to have in front of the full commission so that everybody can have the benefit of hearing these people, not just the subcommittee. So I think that we should get along and get to the full commission.
Well, part of the testimony of the experts, I would agree. But I think the full committee is going to expect us on most of these, not to confirm recommendations that we firmly believe in. But this one, I think you're right.
I'll tell you this, when it comes before the full commission, I will make a firm recommendation. But what it'll be, I don't know, because it'll depend on what I read the night before.
All of which proves it really, perhaps it doesn't make a big deal of difference.
Is there a second to that?
Yeah.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Well, that takes care of today's agenda, Don, unless you have something further, or Mr. Plant has some further question.
Nothing further, really, just an attempt to get this little piece of information to Don and George and Jim and anybody else. The Wayne Law Review, summer 1968, came September 5th. It's 14 Wayne Law Review, number 3. About half of it is devoted to a symposium on the proposed Michigan Revised Criminal Code, and it's real helpful from that standpoint. It pulls a lot of stuff together.
You have that.
Good.
Thank you.
I'm right to get to one myself. Our library's got $3 a copy.
Well, Mr. President, Don, what do you think about another subcommittee meeting? Any thoughts at this time?
Well, I have some real thoughts because I didn't begin school a week from Monday, and I would find the 2 week interval much too short now for that reason, and I would want at least a month, I would hope, between now and the next subcommittee meeting when it discusses this material,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
How about you, Courtney? You know, I kind of feel the same way. I think I could be sure of having a draft of culpability ready in a month. Not sooner.
Depending on when they have the full commission meeting, which may be longer than that, but you might be able to schedule the subcommittee the day before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We want to line up the psychiatric office this morning. You're still going to try to get to California.
Okay. We'll wait and see what the Georgia reply is on that.
All right. Anything else comes to the subcommittee? Thank you, Justice Long, for getting over here. If you could, sorry. I got him off.
Can I have a copy of that minutes? What was it?
The interim committee. Listen, we'll send you some, Jordan.